If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John live at the President Hotel. Nate Bucati back in studio. And right now we have our baseball insider from ESPN, Buster Olney, on the show. Buster, what's up, man? How are you?
Not much. I was wondering why you sound like you're doing, you're doing play-by-play on the putting on the 17th green at the Masters.
Well, I think that maybe someone was knocking at my door telling me to shut up. And so I've taken on the Nate says it's my bedroom voice. How he knows that, I have no idea. But, yes, that do sound like a golf voice. Thank you, Buster. I take that as a compliment. You know, Buster, we've been really enjoying watching the young kids for the Royals play. They've been exciting. They've called up Michael Massey now and Nate Eaton to go with what they already have, with so many young players like Melendez and Prado and Pasquantino and Bobby Witt Jr. and Kyle Isbell. Brady Singer's been pitching well. Chris Bubich has been pitching well. You know, Daniel Lynch is healthy. And so now you're really starting to see the nucleus here and some exciting baseball. It's a lot more fun watching this team now than it was in the first half. From your point of view, what do you think? This looks like this could be the start of something at least very promising for Royals fans.
Yeah, you love the energy level around. You love the excitement, the players getting into it, new generation. You know, way back in the day, I remember talking to Davey Johnson. This is when I would cover the Orioles in the 90s, and he talked about the need for young players. He goes, look, even if you have a team that has success, you got to turn over the roster. You got to get some young guys. And those guys really, you know, help to energize some of the veterans, to help them along on days, slow days. And there definitely were a lot of days early this year where it felt like the Royals were sleepwalking. Because I don't cover the team on a daily basis, I can't attribute it to, you know, this person or that person or blame that person. But it's been remarkable to see the difference and to see, you know, those guys having fun. And it's really cool. It gets me excited for what's to come here down the stretch and going into next year.
One of the things that's also emerging right now that I think has to have Royals fans excited is Brady Singer's performance, Buster. He's, after having some struggles early in the season, really seemed like he's finally starting to hit his stride. And that's something the Royals we've been waiting for them to show, that they can produce their own pitching staff, you know, and develop these guys. And I'm curious if you're hearing much buzz about the way that he is pitching here over the last couple of months.
Not, you know, I haven't specifically asked folks, about what they're seeing in him. But, yeah, look, you track the improvement that he's had. Watched him pitch a few times. He seems to be going with much more confidence. And let's face it, when you look at the last 10-15 years of the American League Central, ultimately it always seems like it comes back to, you know, which of the teams is the best pitching. That's why the Cleveland, you know, Indians and then now the Guardians have been, you know, so predominant within the division. They've kept up that pipeline of pitching. They've been able to, you know, advance guys, you know, dating back from CC Sabathia to Cliff Lee, you know, to Corey Kluber. Now you have Shane Bieber. That's what's kept them having success as a mid-market, small-market team. The Tampa Bay Rays, they've been able to do that too. So if you're the Royals and you're seeing what Brady's been doing and you've seen his development during the course of the year and the fact that he dug himself out of a slow start, it's incredibly heartening. Because that to me, I mean, it's fun to watch the – you know, Vinny, you know, lifting a teammate up and doing the Simba thing. That's all cool, and it's fun to see the energy. But ultimately, the Royals are going to have success or failure based on the quality of their pitching.
Buster Olney is our guest. Buster, what was your reaction to the Tigers firing their GM?
Not a surprise. Look, you know, he took over from Dave Dombrowski years ago. And, you know, they had a number of years. They went through the tanking years. They cut their payroll back. Mike Ilitch, you know, their longtime owner, passed away. His son Chris took over. They went back to, you know, instead of having the model of the owner spending as much money as he wanted to spend, they went back to, you know, conducting their business like a small market, mid-market team. And so the decisions had to be more precise. They had to, you know, wind up making deals that worked out big, and they haven't. And it's been a struggle, and I was among those. I remember talking to you guys in the spring, actually standing right outside of the Tigers' dugout in a spring training game about how, you know, they had a lot of hope and there's a lot of excitement, and it's been a total disaster. So it's not a surprise that someone, you know, paid the price with their job, and Al has been in there long enough where I think they probably just want to turn it over. I would say that the most shocking thing that came out of that yesterday was when Chris Ilitch, their owner, was asked the question about, you know, the trades of Justin Verlander, J.D. Martinez in 2017. And Chris Ilitch's quote was, "I didn't trade those players away. Our general manager did. Al did." If I was a friend of Chris Ilitch, I'd say, "Hey, buddy." you know, when you're the owner of the team, the buck stops with you. You're telling me that the Tigers traded a guy on a Hall of Fame trajectory, you know, multiple Cy Young Award winner, former MVP in Justin Verlander, and the owner didn't have input on that and didn't have veto power and didn't have ultimate authority? What a joke. And, you know, after reading that quote, I'm like, well, that's one of the problems. If Chris Ilitch is pointing at the finger at the general manager saying it's all his fault, that's not a good sign for the Tigers going forward. He might want to rethink that.
You know, I think that actually kind of leads to an interesting topic that I hadn't even really planned on asking you about here today, Buster, but we still are kind of trying to find out, or we're still waiting to find out what we have in our new owner here in Kansas City.
Yeah.
In John Sherman. I think this is a good sign, personally. He hasn't been real out front, you know, like we haven't. It's not like he's one of these owners that like a Jerry Jones or something who's constantly in the media talking or anything or meddling. He seems like he's kind of come in and let Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo run the operation the way they want to run it. But I am told he's sitting back and evaluating everything. And I guess I'm curious. I mean, he had a, you know, he was with the Cleveland organization, had an ownership stake there, and took some things. You mentioned how they've had this success in the Central earlier. I don't know if you have any insight on that, but for us, I think a lot of us are kind of waiting to see how is he going to run things here in Kansas City.
Yeah, and I, you know, don't I haven't talked to him during the course of this season. I think I met him once when he was in the Cleveland ownership group. I will tell you this, is that all I've ever heard about him is he's terrific in what he does. You know, people feel like he's exactly what an owner should be in terms of how he conducts his business. And I, based on what I've heard from other people, and I, you know, as they say, I can't say that I covered him on a day-to-day basis, but based on what I've heard from other people, if the Royals make a significant decision like the Tigers did yesterday, then I think he would be at a press conference saying, you know what, that was my decision. You know, he ultimately would, you know, step up and take ownership, which he has to do. I mean, all of these teams are shaped based on the budgets that the owners give them. You know, like we've been talking, I think I talked to you guys about this last week. You know, there's a lot of kudos being thrown the way of A.J. Preller, the Padres general manager, which has kind of made me smile a little bit. Because you know what's changed in San Diego? It's not that A.J. Preller is suddenly, you know, ramped up as a deal maker. Their payroll has tripled in 5 years. They've gone from $70 million a year, $70 million payroll in 2017, to $210 million this year. It's tripled. So, and that's the decision by Peter Seidler, the owner. Ultimately, it's the owner's decision to design a payroll. Ultimately, it's an owner's decision to decide whether or not a team is going to compete or if they're going to tank. And ultimately, it's a, you know, an owner's decision whether or not to trade away a future Hall of Famer like Justin Verlander. everything I hear about John Sherman is that he would be someone who understands that responsibility and will be accountable for that, and also believes in the chain of command and hiring good people in his eyes and letting those people do their jobs.
Buster Olney is our guest. Buster, your thoughts on Chris Sale?
Boy, oh boy. You know, and maybe that's the reason why we've seen the Red Sox ownership take a step back in terms of spending that Boston's doing. Because I remember very vividly in the spring of 2019, the Red Sox won the World Series in 2018, and there was a lot of talk at the end of 2018, like, boy, Chris Sale was on fumes at the end of the year. Physically, he's not the same. And you guys know that, you know, when he was drafted, I mean, everyone recognized that Sale had great ability, but because he had that funky delivery, he dropped in the draft. People are like, boy, he's an injury waiting to happen. Then, you know, the White Sox had him for a number of years, and their internal conversation was, we need to trade him before he breaks down. Like, we're concerned about him breaking down. So he goes to the Red Sox, they win the World Series, and the next spring, after they won that World Series and Chris Sale threw the last pitch, they signed him to a $145 million extension. I remember writing an article saying this was a really bad idea because of how he finished physically and why would you lock into this type of contract. And I bumped into Chris Sale the day that it came out, and I know he was aware of it, and he didn't say a word to me. And what the words that popped into my head was, that's like a bank robber, like getting out, feeling like he got out of Dodge in a hurry, like at the perfect time, because he's broken down physically, he's had all kinds of issues, and then this year in spring training, as he's coming back from Tommy John surgery, he has a broken rib, and then last weekend when we think he's coming back, or you know, he came back, he threw what, two games, broke his finger on a comebacker, hit back through the mound, and then last weekend, you know, crashes his bike. 49 and a third innings in the first, what, 4 years of that contract for $145 million, it's been a total disaster for the Red Sox and probably goes a long way toward explaining their behavior in their negotiations with Xander Bogaerts and with Rafael Devers.
Does insurance pick that up when a guy's hurt? Like, are they on the hook for that?
In theory, it does. It can. I don't specifically know if the Red Sox have insurance, and I will tell you that there are teams. When I covered the Yankees on a day-to-day basis, they had players who, if they made one appearance or two appearances, it would greatly cut into what they could recover in insurance. You know, first you have to get the insurance, and it'll be, you know, hey, 70% recovery if a player misses the whole year. But if a player actually has some appearances, that percentage could drop precipitously.
We have Buster Olney on the line. Buster, a few years ago when the Mets made that deal to acquire Edwin Diaz, boy, they were criticized, and a lot of people thought they were just dumb for making that deal. It doesn't look so dumb anymore. Edwin Diaz has been incredible, and we've all enjoyed watching that his theme music as he walks to the mound from the bullpen, but I mean, he's one of the big reasons why they're playing so well. And now when you look at that trade, I know Robinson Cano's gone, and he didn't really perform as well as they would have hoped. But that trade doesn't look so stupid now, does it?
No, and Jared Kelnick, who is the primary prospect that the Mariners got, who everyone compared to, you guys remember, Grady Sizemore, you know, he's batting under 150 for the Mariners. He's still young, and there's still hope that he's going to eventually be a good player in the big leagues. But the Mariners' end hasn't panned out as much. I would say that when I've had that question with rival executives, their feeling is, yeah, it was still a really bad trade by the Mets because of the amount of money they took on in Cano, because of the prospect value, and it doesn't mean necessarily prospect return, but prospect value that you're giving up in that deal. They just thought it was a wild overpay. But Edwin Diaz is making the Mets feel a little bit better about it because he's been so dominant. You know, I think we're going to have a question at the end of the year. Should he be the National League Cy Young Award winner? I thought Zach Britton in 2016 had the best relief year that I've ever seen. With the Orioles, he allowed, I think, one home run. He had an ERA of like 0.8. He was completely dominant in terms of if he didn't strike out batters, then he got ground balls. Well, Edwin Diaz has been even more dominant. You know, think about these numbers, and I think these are right that I'm going to give you. In his last 18 appearances, he's faced 63 batters, and guys, out of those 63 batters, he struck out 38 and walked one. Walked one, and he's allowed seven hits. I mean, think about the level of dominance. And to do that in New York, where, you know, a place that we've seen swallow up Sonny Gray, an all-star pitcher, and then Joey Gallo recently, where guys struggle to, you know, bounce back, to see a closer basically getting booed off the mound in his first couple years from the Mets, to bounce back to that, to have that level of dominance, that said something about his toughness. And it's really impressive, maybe more impressive than how he's dominating hitters.
It would have been crazy to ask you this a couple of months ago, Buster. Who's the best team in New York?
Oh, right now, there's no question it's the Mets. You know, with DeGrom back, and you have your fingers crossed because you don't know if he's going to hold up. You know, I talked to you guys before about the thought that, well, if he dials back on velocity, maybe he has a better chance to stay healthy. And Kevin Plawecki, he's a catcher with the Red Sox now, used to be with the Mets, a longtime friend of DeGrom. When I mentioned that to him earlier in the year, he looked at me and smiled. He goes, I don't think old Jake's capable of doing that. And then he came back the other day and threw 102. But when you have DeGrom and you have Scherzer and you have this lineup that puts the ball in play and has really tough at-bats and you got Diaz at the back end, they're a great team. And the Yankees right now are scuffling. You know, they've dropped back now to where they're tied with the Houston Astros for the best record in the American League. That's a problem for the Yankees. They need home field advantage because they were eliminated in Houston in 2017, eliminated in Houston in 2019, eliminated in the wild card game in Boston last year. You know, they got to get their starting pitching right. They got to get Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Rizzo back and healthy. I would say this: the one thing that's going on that's good for the Yankees right now is that somehow, some way, opposing managers still think it's a good idea to pitch to Aaron Judge. He's got 14 homers in his last 21 games, and yet they still keep pitching to him, and it makes me scratch my head.
Yeah, I don't. He murdered the Royals. I don't get it. They kept pitching to him. You know, this would have been ridiculous to ask at the beginning of the season this question. But how bad does it hurt them that they lost Matt Carpenter, because he was incredible in the short time that he was playing for him?
Yeah, I think it's a blow that, you know, they'll be able to overcome if Anthony Rizzo comes back from the back issues. He played yesterday, you know, went hitless, and when he was with the Cubs, every year it seemed like he'd miss some time with some lower back issues. If he comes back and he's okay, then they'll be able to overcome it, especially with Benintendi, you know, now helping to balance their lineup. But Matt Carpenter was this wonderful, great surprise, and he was bringing it, and he's a good guy. You know, people ask me all the time, as I'm sure they do you, you know, who do you root for? And I always respond, I don't care who wins or loses. I hope for great games and hope for good stuff to happen to good people. And that's the way I feel about Matt Carpenter. When I saw that the other day, that he had that freak injury, I mean, when he fouled the ball off his foot, but guys, it wasn't even his front foot, it was his back foot, which is really unusual. And he suffers a broken bone, and he's hoping to come back, but let's face it, there's a real chance his season's over. That stinks. Like, the baseball gods were not fair to Matt Carpenter this week.
Nate Buchetti, any final questions for Buster Olney?
No, Buster, I just I appreciate your time as always, and I know you're going to be on vacation next week, so we're gonna miss you. You know, we'll hold it down for a week for you, but then we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
And I will make sure to get some feedback on Brady Singer for you the next time.
Awesome.
Buster, you're the man. Thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that was Buster Olney, our baseball insider from ESPN. We're still gonna talk to Jesse Newell coming up in the next segment while I head over to the Midland to do the second half of the show live from the Midland, where the 100-year anniversary celebration will be. Don't forget to go to 810WHB.com to check out all the wonderful silent auction items. And that auction, the silent auction, closes at 10 o'clock tonight. So you still have some time to make some great bids. We're also going to talk to Jeff Chedia a little bit later. Gary Pinkle's going to be on the show. Dustin Colquitt and more between now and 10 o'clock. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
So get up, get a move on, and get your groove.
It's time
on.
To talk some it's Chiefs with our Kansas City Chiefs insider beat reporter for the Kansas City Star, Jesse Newell. Follow him on Twitter at Jesse Newell. That's JESSENEWELL. Good morning, Jesse. How are you?
Doing great, Nate. How about yourself?
Doing awesome. How was a day away from practice? Was it just glorious for you?
Yeah, I felt very old man with it because it was like you get one day off in the middle of, you know, four straight days of practice or whatever, eight of nine, that sort of thing. And I was at home doing laundry and mowing and just getting the house back in order for one day before, you know, taking off again. But that was good, productive, and ready to be productive again today.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk about some of the big storylines in camp right now as we get ready for the first preseason game, which I can't believe is only a couple of days away. Here we go. Rashad Fenton's back in practice after starting the season on the PUP list. Can you maybe put in your words the significance of having him back in training and just available on the depth chart in that secondary?
Yeah, it's important. I think it sort of goes back a little bit to the defensive line discussion when the Chiefs signed Carlos Dunlap. You know, what we kept talking about in the offseason is like, well, what are the options if X happens? What are the options if George Karlaftis isn't as productive as you think in the first season? What are the options if Frank Clark, you know, continues to not play as well like he did a season ago? What are the options if one or both of those guys get injured? And Carlos Dunlap, that's why that signing made a lot of sense. It's like, okay, you give yourself a little bit of security there where it's like, okay, you're not banking on George Karlaftis playing 75% of your snaps or having to. You just give yourself a little bit of breathing room, and that's most likely the case with the secondary too. The Chiefs sure seem happy with what they've gotten so far from their rookies in the secondary. When you're talking about Trent McDuffie and you're talking about Joshua Williams, the fourth-round pick, and even Jalen Watson stepping in a little bit as the seventh-round pick, getting some first-team reps about a week ago. But do you really want to put two rookies in there and start them? You know, probably not. So Fenton back, I mean, he had one of the top Pro Football Focus grades a year ago, if you're looking at that as far as coverage goes and defensive back. So yeah, I think he just solidifies it. You want to have more known quantities if you can, and if Joshua Williams can insert the mix and get a few snaps and work in some situations or be the guy that you have in case somebody gets injured, I think that works out a whole lot better than saying, all right, Joshua Williams, you're a fourth-round pick. It's time for you to move from Division II to the NFL and get going from game one. So it is important for the Chiefs. I think it just solidifies for them what they have. And like I said, Fenton's been a good player in his own right for the Chiefs like he was a season ago. And if he continues that sort of production, then the Chiefs defense looks a lot better than it did, you know, maybe a few days before he got back.
I've seen some videos that you've retweeted of some of the one-on-one battles. I saw Fenton going against Juju Smith-Schuster in practice a couple days ago. And I feel like that might be one of the more entertaining things to watch in camp this year would be these corners against this new group of Chiefs wide receivers. How would you characterize those battles so far in camp?
Yeah, it's also different. And again, I didn't cover the Chiefs last year, but this is different from what it's normally been for Andy Reid, what it's been for Patrick Mahomes. One of those videos I think that you're referencing is, you know, Rashad Fenton had some really good coverage on Juju, and Juju just goes over the top of him on a kind of a jump ball thrown by Patrick Mahomes and catches it anyway. And that's one of those where the Chiefs have bigger receivers this year, and I wrote about this earlier this week, is the red zone is going to be interesting to watch for the Chiefs because in the past they haven't always had the best production in the NFL in that particular spot. And, you know, one reason you can say to that is sometimes if you're Cincinnati or whoever, you just throw a jump ball to Jamar Chase and he goes and gets it, you know. And the Chiefs haven't had those type of receivers unless you want to count Travis Kelce as a big body. But, you know, the rest of them, Tyreek is not really that, or DeMarcus Robinson or Byron Pringle. Well, now they have it with Juju, and now they have it with MVS. So, yeah, those have been fascinating, and you kind of have to put everything in context when it comes to training camp practices, just because a lot of times these defensive backs are at a huge disadvantage compared to when you get out there 11-on-11. Plus, you know, there's a little bit more in your head if you're a receiver when there can be full contact and full padded contact, and sometimes these guys are out there on an island. But those have been interesting to watch, and I think it's part of the reason that we've been talking about where Juju Smith-Schuster really has emerged, and then obviously Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes still have their connection that they've had previously. So, yeah, it's been good to see that. But like I said, we'll see more in these preseason games, and that's why it'll be fun to watch this Saturday to see when the pads come on and the lights come on, who is out there still making plays. That's what these games are for.
Now, one of the things that I heard some pundits talking about when I was listening to some of my NFL podcasts yesterday was the fact that you mentioned, you know, bigger bodies in terms of being able to throw jump balls, stuff like that. Was also Juju Smith-Schuster is known as one of the better tackle breakers in the NFL when it comes to wide receivers, and that Sky Moore, Stephen talks a lot about his thick legs, but you know that he's good at running through contact and he's difficult to tackle. And if you have wide receivers who catch the ball and then are difficult to get to the ground, that is one more thing that would lead you to think that Patrick Mahomes is going to take some of those shorter passes this year that maybe last year, obviously the storyline being about him maybe trying to be too greedy sometimes and still trying to force it down the field when the more underneath stuff was available. And again, we won't know for sure till we see the regular season games. Do you think we'll be able to get much of a glimpse of that in this preseason game number one, or is that just something we'll have to wait till the regular season to really get a feel for?
Yeah, I wish. You know, it's one of those worlds where you wish that everybody's so starved for football that the Chiefs could play their starters for a half and have no risk of injury, or for the whole game have no risk of injury. But we know that's not the world they live in, and they live in a reality where if Patrick Mahomes got hurt in the first preseason game, that would be crushing, or somebody else got hurt first preseason game. So you want to avoid that as much as possible. So I don't think we will. That's just being honest. And more of that stuff will come out in the regular season. And we know that most of this stuff is kind of vanilla up with the playbook to not give too much away. So, I think it'll be more a process that goes. And I do think we also need to look at this big picture-wise and realize that it's going to be tough for all this chemistry to happen right away, week one. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So much of what the Kelce and Mahomes connection is sometimes Travis Kelce will just break off his route because he sees it's a certain zone defense and he's going to kind of sit in a window. And Patrick Mahomes sees the same thing. So it's like it's the benefit of having an alien as your quarterback is that he's able to make these advanced reads and adjust on the fly, so that's really difficult for defenses who are trying to zone up and say, okay, you go here, you go here. And then all of a sudden this tight end runs a route that's never been run in the history of football to take advantage of what you're doing in front of him. And so how quickly will that develop with Juju? How quickly will that develop with MBS and Sky Moore? I would say probably right now Juju's ahead of the other guys, but it does, you know, at least gives you a little bit of pause with this offense to say, will that chemistry be right all the time? Because if it's not right, what happens is Mahomes thinks you're going to do one thing, the receiver thinks you're going to do another, and then he throws it to a place he thinks the receiver is going to go, and all of a sudden that ends up either as an incompletion or, you know, even worse, an interception. So that's the sort of thing early in the season that it makes the Chiefs offense so successful, but it also makes it a little bit risky if you don't have guys that have done it for a long period of time. So I think working through some of those kinks will be part of the early season as well. But as I've kind of said before, I think toward the end of the season this could be really, really good for the Chiefs. It just might take some growing pains to get there.
So we won't get to see much of what maybe the first team offense really is going to look like in this preseason game. It sounded like from listening to Dave Tobe talk that we might get at least a chance to see maybe not what the special teams for sure is going to look like, but we're going to get to see auditions, right? Is that fair to say that this is going to be a big game for special team auditions since they have so many new guys they got to work in there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the number one guy I think maybe everybody's watching is going to be Isaiah Pacheco. He's going to be the starter at kick returner. He's obviously going to get some carries in there. And, you know, Dave Merritt talked a little bit about this, the cornerbacks coach for the Chiefs. He talked about his Fab Five in the secondary, you know, the ones that they drafted, McDuffie, Cook, Joshua Williams, Jalen Watson, Najee Johnson. And those guys, he said, were all nervous this week. You know, they're ready to get out there for a preseason game, but haven't been out there before. And so many times in camp, certain guys emerge and they play well and everybody's talking about them. And, you know, I'm raising my hand over here. You know, somebody goes out to practice every day, you got to talk about something. So you say, hey, this guy's looking good. He's looking good without pads on. Now he's looking good with pads on. But how are they going to look going against another defense or offense that is trying its hardest to knock the ball out and to tackle you and to make sure that you don't get the reception? So I think that's the biggest part of this game is that yeah, not only the special teams, but how do these rookies look? I mean, how many of them continue to ascend? Because we've heard and seen so many good things from rookies so far in camp, but now it's you know, like the old expression, kind of where the rubber meets the road here. Like, will those things translate to tape? Will those things translate to a setting where there are fans and where it's on television and where the pressure is greater than it is at St. Joseph's? So that'll probably be the biggest thing to watch here. And you can also watch, you know, some individual battles too. I mean, I know a lot of people are fascinated. Like, I don't know how many snaps Frank Clark will get, but we've all kind of wondered, you know, how is skinny Frank going to fare? We know he's lost the weight. He looks great. I mean, can he win with speed? You know, can he disrupt a play? Can he do those sorts of things? So maybe some of these individual battles along with how the rookies look, I would say that's probably the greatest intrigue of this first preseason game, to see if some of those guys continue to put together what has been so far some really good training camps.
That's great stuff. I'm making notes here of the things Jesse's telling us to watch for in the game on Saturday afternoon. How do you handicap the punt return situation at this point?
Yeah, Dave Tobe talked about this a couple days ago, and it's kind of fascinating, and I think it's kind of fluid. I think the Chiefs right now, so the three people involved, Mecole Hardman, Sky Moore, Trent McDuffie, okay? And Sky Moore, it doesn't sound like it's something he did very much in college, but it seems like something they want him to be able to do, and they think he could be successful at. The Mecole thing is sort of what makes everything muddy. You know what I mean? Because if you remember, Tyreek used to be kind of like the punt returner, like break glass in case of emergency. Like, if you needed a huge play and had to throw him back there, you would. But it was a rare thing. Like, he was not the every-time guy. So the question sort of becomes, is Mecole valuable enough on offense that you don't want to use him in punt return and then sacrifice, as Dave Toe talked about, potentially the first play on the next offensive drive because he's on the sideline resting because he had to run all over the field to catch the punt and run upfield, all those sorts of things. So I think they probably want Sky Moore to get it eventually once he becomes more comfortable catching it. But, again, this will be a good audition for him to do it. The other question becomes just, you know, who emerges as receivers? You know, is there a world where Mecole is sort of in the same role he was a year ago and so it doesn't hurt that much for the Chiefs to use him at punt return? There probably is. Is there a world where Sky Moore just surpasses him on the receiver depth chart and it makes more sense for Mecole to continue to do the punt return duties? Probably so. But as of right now, I think that from listening to Dave Tobe, I think what they want eventually to happen is probably for Mecole to be more involved with the offense and to do some of the Tyreek things that he couldn't do a year ago, go deep, stretch the defense, those sorts of things, and then have Sky Moore step into that punt return role and roll from there. So I guess we'll see how it plays out, and there are many different iterations of how it could play out, but it seems like those are the three main guys, and Mecole or Sky Moore, I'd say throughout the course of the season, that's a preferred option to one or the other.
So the very interesting conversation that Mecole Hardman had with the media, in which he made some comparisons to kangaroos in Australia and then Amazon Prime as the punt returner. Trying to parse through that, he sounded to me like a guy that if you let Mecole Hardman ride it out for himself, he would be much more involved in the offense and not called upon nearly as much in the punt return game. Am I reading that correctly? Like, that's if he gets his choice, that's the way he would like for it to play out.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's exactly, again, if you're envisioning how Mecole would be returning punts less, it would be that he's having a really productive season on offense and you can't afford to lose him for the first play or two of the ensuing offensive possession. And if you're Mecole Hardman getting ready for a contract year, yes, the preference is going to be that you have 1,200 yards receiving or a bunch of yards running or playing a dual threat role for the offense and being more productive there. So, yeah, I agree that in McCole's mind, the best thing would be for him to be so productive on offense and so valuable there that somebody else needs to handle the punt returning. For the Chiefs, though, you know, they have different incentives, which is to win games and to see who's best on the team and to see if anybody emerges and to play the best guys. And, you know, so there is at least a world out there where that could not develop as Mecole is hoping, and the Chiefs could be better with Mecole continuing to return punts and having somebody else, you know, with the first team offense in that spot. So we'll see how it plays out, but it is kind of a fascinating one in punt return. We say all this, and usually, you know, I think special teams probably is I mean, Dave Tobe's done a great job, don't get me wrong, but I failed to see as many – this could be just me thinking of this, but it feels like there were more Dante Halls 20 years ago where the guys were always returning punts for touchdowns and crazy things were breaking down. It feels like teams are maybe more secure in their coverage units now, so it might not be as big a deal as it once was, but it will be something to watch play out because I think it does kind of impact not only what McColl's role is, but it kind of is a bigger picture look at how the Chiefs' offense is going to pan out and some of these questions we don't know yet when it comes to the receivers.
Well, I think it's interesting because Dave Tobe does seem to want guys that can be a weapon, right? Like, he doesn't seem overly conservative when it comes to punt returns, kick returns, and the Chiefs always seem to have, they're good for a return, you know, from each position per year. But I guess the way I look at it is, job number one, just catch the ball. You know, make sure that Patrick Mahomes is not denied the opportunity to go back out on the field by turning it over. And that's actually a much more difficult skill than people probably realize. Fielding punts is hard. Punts don't come at you straight the way that the kickoffs do. And you got to try to catch the thing while there's traffic coming down and possibly going to, you know, take your head off. You mentioned Sky Moore not having the experience there. Do we have any early indication as to how natural he is at just that first part of the job of just making sure you secure the ball when you field the punt?
Well, Dave Tobin referenced it a little bit. He talked about how McDuffie was probably one of the better catchers of punts, at least they have right now. So if you're looking for maybe the security of it, that might be the guy you would go with at this moment. So, again, sometimes from coaches, you can maybe garner more from what they don't say than what they do, and they're not going to throw their guys under the bus, and they shouldn't. But, yeah, it seems probably like right now it's a work in progress for Sky Moore. And so some of these live game reps could be good for him in preseason games, and you can gauge potentially how close or how ready he might be to do that in a game. But, you know, it makes sense because if you look at him, he looks like a punt returner. You know what I mean? Kind of that smaller build, got speed, got a little bit of wiggle to him. So you can understand why the Chiefs would be interested in having him do that. But the execution of it, as you said, Nate, that's going to be the most important part. And I've heard so many coaches talk about what you're saying. Like, the most important thing, if nothing is there, just fair catch the ball and give the ball to your offense. And that's going to be priority number one when it comes to punt returning, because we know how deadly this Chiefs offense can be even without getting any help from the special teams or the punt return unit.
Jesse, with all this talk about wide receivers, you got me curious. From what you've seen at training camp, outside of Travis Kelce, who's starting to develop a better chemistry or repertoire with Patrick Mahomes, and how far behind would you say the other receivers are from the receiver outside of Travis Kelce, who's looked like they developed some type of chemistry with Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the easy answer is Juju, and it seems like those guys have just had a connection, not quite to the Kelce level, but pretty close. And you know, I talked to Patrick about a week ago about this, and you know, Juju can run all the routes too, and he can kind of be a bigger type body, kind of like Kelce is. So I think he's sort of developed some trust in Patrick Mahomes, being able to go over the middle and have, you know, a wide catch radius and being able to be reliable and be in a certain spot. So I would say those two guys, you know, to be completely honest with you guys, you know, we hear so much about the receivers, and, you know, the receivers are at a natural advantage in camp. I get it. And honestly, Sky Moore has been good in camp. I mean, I think he's been better than people expected coming in as a second-round pick and probably further along than they had hoped at this point, which is a positive. But, you know, I will say one of the big things I've taken from camp in some of these 11-on-11 settings where, once again, the offense has the benefit. You know, the safety can't come over the middle and just clock somebody if they're ready to, trying to hit a seam down the middle, that sort of thing. They have to kind of pull up because they're not trying to get anybody injured. But there have been times where the defense really has dominated 11-on-11 settings. Patrick Mahomes has gone through his reads and kept going, and has not found open players. So that to me, you know, it's not, oh, my gosh, this thing's broken. Oh, my gosh, the Chiefs are going to have the 20th-ranked offense in the league. It's sort of just like, okay, it's something to note at this point. And, again, it goes back to that bigger picture of what we've talked about this whole offseason, which is sometimes Tyreek was open even when he wasn't open. You know, the guy's really fast, and the guy – basically dictated coverage a lot of times, what defenses were doing against him. And you take that guy away, and Patrick Mahomes is going to have to change how he plays. He's talked about this. You know, he's going to have to go get through his read and make sure that he finds the open guy. But that's the concern right now. Are there open guys? You know, are those guys seeing the field the same way as he is? Are those guys making sure to give him an option? And when he gets to his second and third read, are ready, to read the defense and be there. So we'll see how this all plays out. And, again, I think it goes back to even what we talked about earlier, which is this thing could look a lot better in week 7-8 than it does in week 1 and week 2. The goal is always week 1 and week 2. And with the Chiefs, the schedule's really tough week 1 and week 2. But this might be something that is a bit of a work in progress, that by the time that the season starts to end, the Chiefs look a lot better than when they started. And that's sort of some of that is just natural progression and guys getting more comfortable, the Sky Moores, the MVSs, even Juju's trying to get more comfortable with Patrick Mahomes and what he's able to do on a football field.
Final question, Jesse, your reaction to the news that the Zambezi Zinger is coming back to Worlds of Fun in 2023.
I missed this. Is that for real?
Yeah, it's all over Twitter this morning.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my mind around it right now, to be honest with you.
Wow. So I will say this about the Zambezi Zinger. This was even before we were all really concerned about head injuries about 20, 25 years ago, but I was still surprised riding it that it was legal. You know what I mean? Because your head was jarred so many times back and forth every ride, which, again, is great fun as a kid, sort of like a roller coaster bumper cars. But, yeah, I'm going to guess the safety standards might have to step up a little bit in the last 25 years. But if it's not, then, yeah, let's party on. Let's get out there and bang our heads once again.
From what I'm seeing on Twitter, I don't know if any of this is official, but there will be a tunnel as well, just like last time around. Hopefully it's all like you said, up to safety code and all that. But everything that's old is new again. The Zambezi Zinger coming back to Worlds of Fun, and you can count Jesse Newell as a person that's on board. Jesse, thank you so much for the time, man. We'll be talking to you next week to unpack the first preseason game of 2022.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Nate.
All right, that's Jesse Newell. Follow him on Twitter at Jesse Newell. We will be back with a weather forecast right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Mr. Blue Sky is out today. Gary Lezak joins us for our morning weather forecast. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. I know we say this all the time, but this has to be one of my top 10 favorite songs of all time. It's got to be.
It's amazing. You've had some good weather this week.
I know. It's been a great summer week. You know, just we need rain, but there's nothing we can do about it, so let's enjoy it. You know, I'm from Southern California. It never rained there. It's beautiful. So we get to enjoy this gorgeous weather today. Good training camp weather. Good weather to get ready for the Chiefs season. So are you going to be there tonight?
Oh, I'll be there. And I don't know how much we're supposed to say, but I'm very excited for your portion of the show. We're probably supposed to not tell anybody what's going to – are we supposed to tell anybody or you got to keep that quiet, right?
Because I don't even hardly know, so don't say anything. That's just okay. Surprise me even, you know?
Okay. I know that you're going to be up on stage entertaining the crowd at some point, though. I know that much.
Great. Fantastic. Should I give the weather forecast?
Tonight? No. Now? Maybe.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, tonight's going to be incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting, and a whole bunch of you out there are going to be coming. Do we still have tickets available? Is it now sold out?
I don't know. I think we're sold out now. I think we've got all the tickets spoken for. So the 100-year celebration of sports radio, well, of 810 WHB. It's only been sports radio 810 for about a fifth of that time.
Yeah, only 20 years or so, 25 years. That's
quarter
all. Yep. Yeah, it's amazing. No, it's a great celebration. Looking forward to seeing all the A-listers out there and the B-listers and the C-listers. And the D ones like me. And
oh, you're A-list. You're A-list. I'm down the list. You're A-list. I think our next guest on the show is considered an A-lister as well.
Who's on next?
Jeff Chedia.
Oh, wow. So I can't wait to see everybody. So this will be exciting. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and the weather is fantastic. Nate, on Twitter, my last tweet, the retweet, the person posted the hurricane forecast that were made by that's being tracked by Barcelona supercomputing site. Everyone should go retweet that, add a little comment about the LRC if you want. And but there's one forecast out there predicting a quiet hurricane season. And even in Forbes magazine this morning, all of a sudden they're like, quiet hurricane season. No one saw this coming. I'm like, yeah, we did. So March 23rd, our press release predicted a quiet hurricane season based on the LRC, which is going to be a paradigm shift in meteorology over the next few years when I accomplish my goal of Weather 2020 becoming a global company. So I'm working on that. Go retweet that. You'll see the one in there that shows that chart that shows Weather 2020 as the one low prediction for hurricane season. It is very quiet in the tropics. Very good news for those along the Gulf Coast and the East Coast. We have one big target, though, the very end of the month, and that's also in our prediction for a system to threaten Florida, between Cuba and Florida, around September 1st, maybe the last week of August. We'll see if that develops. I expect it to, but nothing now. It's very quiet. I know we're in Kansas City, but when we make these predictions for hurricane season, just remember that was born out of all these years of tracking the LRC since I started the blog in 2002 and when I discovered this in 1987, 1988. And, you know, we have predicted Hurricane Harvey and Irma and Maria and Michael and Tropical Storm Gordon and others. And you can, so, you know, no one thinks you can predict these things, but you can't. And everything weather, including today's absolutely spectacularly gorgeous day. We will have a chance of rain next week, but it seems to be going all around us right now. Sunny and no chance of rain today. A high temperature of 89 or 90 degrees. And then tomorrow, around 90 degrees. Then Saturday, we're going to jump to 95, 96. Sunday, 95, 96. And then possibly a few thunderstorms next week. Some cooler air tries to get in here. It may be in the 70s or 80s next week. So, Nate, tomorrow I am going to head to L.A., meet my high school buddies, and we're going to go to Kauai, Hawaii. Have you ever been to the island of Kauai?
Nope. I've been to Maui one time, and that was it. My wife and I, that's where we went on our honeymoon, and we've never been back, but it was maybe our favorite place we've ever been to in our life. So someday, and I've heard Kauai is even more amazing. So
I'll be sharing some pictures on social media. You know that. But my high school buddies, I'm going to probably have a couple martinis, probably.
One martini, two martini, three martini floor. You'll be warming up for that tonight. I know you're going to be getting after it tonight.
Oh boy, I don't know. If I'm going to go on stage, you think I don't know if I have a couple martinis. I don't know.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But right now it just hit 69 degrees.
Oh wow, he wasn't ready for that.
Yep.
Yes, he was. It's
69 degrees right now.
Amazing.
Oh my, everyone. It's time to celebrate 69 degrees in Kansas City on this gorgeous morning. Expect a high of 89. It's amazing, Nate.
Incredible. It's all coming together on this 100-year anniversary.
Oh, my God. Think about that. I forgot about that. What a day to celebrate. Absolutely. 69 right now. All right. Have a great day, Nate, and I'll see you tonight.
Gary Lezak, the best in the business. It's all coming together. We've got Jeff Chedia in studio next on Sports Radio 810 WHB.